All right. I am Beverly Lewis, and most of you know me, but for those who don't, I am a trainer, an executive speaker, and author, and today I have with me Tiffany Hines. And the subject we're talking about today is what women bring to leadership, thoughts on the cracked ceiling. And I am so honored to get to interview Tiffany today. Tiffany is local. She lives in the same city that I do, Panama City, Florida. And we met each other through a business organization. And I know that Tiffany has her master's, her MBA, Master's in Business Administration, which gets my attention immediately, honestly, because I know that the statistics is right now about only 36% of people in MBA, in the earning MBAs are women. So we're still very much a minority in those getting MBAs. But she also is in the C-suite. She is the chief operating officer, COO of a local nonprofit. And so welcome, Tiffany. I'm so glad that you've joined me today.
Thank you, Beverly. I'm honored that you've asked me to do this.
And, you know, in talking about what women bring to leadership, I have to admit, I, of course, as a woman business leader and, you know, as you are, this is something that we live with and every day. And a couple years ago when I read the book Lean In by Sheryl Sandberg, actually there were several books that I read that kind of really sparked my initiative to talk about this regularly, because as a mom, I was always very conscious of modeling for my daughters boldness and going after your dreams and, you know, living courageously, so to speak. But it's much more in the news now. I'm not the only one that it stays forefront in my thinking, am I?
Absolutely not. And it's funny that you mention your daughter and living bold for her. When I was in the MBA program, everybody that was in the program had a job, and I did not. It was a part-time program. I was a stay-at-home mom, and everybody else had, you know, their executive positions. And so I felt like I was at a little bit of a disadvantage, especially when some of our instructors would give us projects to do to, you know, to take to our workplace and, you know, try this out and try that out and do this method and come back and report on it. Well, the only thing I had to use was my family. Now, the good thing is that I have a very large family. So, you know, some of my classmates that were going into workplaces and trying this out on 10 people or 5 people, you know, I was not at a disadvantage for that because we do have such a large family. But it, you know, what I find with leadership in the home and leadership in the workplace, it is so synonymous. And we can use those real-life experiences in both places to enhance both parts of our lives.
I love that. And I will go ahead and tell. I know we joked about it earlier that people always gasp when you tell them that you have 8 children. And so, you know, to me, to put that on your resume with your MBA and your COO position, it's like, okay, I've got to interview Tiffany because you are – doing this, you're doing what so many women, I think, hope to do, like to think they could do, but then seeing people doing it gives us courage to step out and stretch and go for our dreams. But I love what you said about it being synonymous, because I've always taught that leadership begins in the living room. It begins in our homes. And, you know, to earn the influential positions in the marketplace or even in our communities and have our homes falling apart is not success. And so you do have to figure out that synonymous factor.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, even though I'm COO, that is a very fancy title for somebody that is in an office of 6 people. And I didn't start out as COO. You know, when I went back into the workplace, my youngest was starting kindergarten, and I was not even finished with my MBA. I believe I was in my last semester of my MBA, and my youngest started kindergarten, and I said to my husband, I said, okay, it's time for me to get back into the workplace. And he was unhappy with his job, so he became stay-at-home dad, with as many as we have, somebody had to be stay at home. You know, there's always doctor's appointments and parent-teacher conferences, and somebody's got to take the kids to school and from school. And so unless you can own your own business and, you know, make your own schedule, one of us had to be stay at home. So we traded places. And my boss took a chance on me. Most people do not want to hire somebody when a woman especially, when they know that they have that many children, because the first thing that comes to mind is, well, how dedicated are they going to be to my business? Are they always going to be asking off so they can do this, that, or the other? You know, if the children get sick, who's going to have to take care of them? Is it going to be the mom or is it going to be the dad? And so he really took a chance on me, and I was upfront, and I was honest, and I was open, and I said, listen, I said, if you hire me, you will not regret it. I promise you. And he did hire me as a bookkeeper. So here I am, you know, finishing up my MBA, and I'm a bookkeeper. But you know what? It was a job, and I was satisfied with it. And throughout the years, I proved myself, and I proved my worth. And next thing I know, he's saying, listen, I need somebody in this position to lead the staff, and can you do it? You know, will you be their leader so I can go out into the community and be the face of our company and do what needs to be done on the outside? I know you can do it, but will you do it? And, you know, I was so honored that he had that, you know, the confidence in me, knowing that I could. I knew I could. But just to know that the people that are your leaders appreciate you and want to build you up, it's a feeling that I just can't even describe.
That's huge. And I think that's one of the reasons that I like to do calls like this and interviews like this, is because, you know, I'm all about helping people build healthy company cultures. And the gender separation thing is very real. You know, we talk about cracks in the glass ceiling. I'm known to be a Pollyanna, and I've always been looking for the positive thing. And I think that as a business owner, I owned my own business starting out of college, and so I didn't really experience the glass ceiling myself until later, when I started doing training in companies and seeing it and witnessing it and knowing that it's very real, and yet there are cracks in it. And the more that we talk about it, the more we address it, and Tiffany, if I might say this, the more we let people know that we are not, you know, I think that back in the 60s and 70s when the women's lib movement took place, that there was some damage that was done, because men were threatened, you know,
right.
That it was often done in a threatening way of you know, demanding
right.
more recognition, demanding. And I think that we make more progress when we use our strengths as women to and recognize them ourselves, and then step into the need, because the need is there. So let's talk about those strengths. You know, I feel like I think that when women first started breaking into the C-suite, for example, or into higher levels of education, higher levels of leadership and authority, that we thought we had to act like men. We thought we even had to dress like men, you know, with the suits and the slacks and everything. And so much has changed. And I think now that we can recognize what do women bring uniquely to the marketplace, which is so needed. And what would you say some of those things are?
You know, I hate to stereotype, and I hate to speak for women as a whole. So, you know, I prefer to give you my thoughts and feelings and my own experiences.
Right.
You know, what you said about the threatening attitude, that attitude, really and truly, everything revolves around attitude. And in my opinion, somebody said something to me, you know, not too long ago, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. And it's so true. You know, I've tried it with my children. I've tried it with my employees. You know, I can say something that I know that they are not going to want to hear. But if I say it with a loving heart, and they know that my mind and my heart is in the right place, even though it's something that they don't necessarily want to hear, that helps. It is a strength. And, you know, I don't know that all men really think about that kind of thing in the workplace. And so one of the strengths that women bring, even though it can also be a weakness, is that, you know, the nurturing and the emotion. And, you know, my husband likes to joke, you know, about how women are so emotional and this and that and the other. But you know what? It's needed, because we're not robots. And you look at the consumers, women are primarily consumers over men, because a lot of time the men are so busy doing the work. And so, you know, you have to relate to who your consumers are, you know, in whatever business or industry you may be in. And if there's not women in the workplace and leadership roles, then there's a struggle, because you're not giving your consumers what they want.
Yes, there's a big disconnect. Yes, I would agree with that. So we talk about the emotion, and I think that, you know, one of the reasons that that's so important too is that we are seeing now there's much more concern about people being happy at work. You know, the economy has shifted back to, you know, people do have job options. They're you know, the hiring is healthy, and so retaining good people is more than just demanding the highest level of work. And now we are seeing more women in the workplace, and it requires some flexibility and understanding. So that's what I see, is that level of, I might even call it vulnerability and authenticity that women bring, and taking it out of just, you know, how much work can I get out of this person,
right.
But like, let's be a family. That's what people want in their workplace now. They want to feel like they're working with people that care about them.
You know, you think of the amount of time that we spend in the workplace and the amount of waking hours that we spend at home. And there is so, I mean, you know, my day is filled with my workplace. And, I don't generally call my coworkers. I generally call them my workmates, because that's what we are. We're workmates and we're family. And some days I don't like some of them, and some days they don't like me. But that's how it is in the family. You know, there's some days that some of my children will say, "Mom, am I your favorite?" And I'll say, "Well, today you are, but yesterday you certainly were not." And, you know, it depends. And we are a family, and I love that. I love, love, love it. And working in the not-for-profit, you know, of course, we don't necessarily make as much as somebody would make in the private sector with an MBA. And, you know, sometimes my husband will come to me and say, "Well, I found this job opportunity, and look at this position that's available." And every single time I look at him and I say, "I don't care, because I love where I am. I love the people. I love the flexibility. I have a 2-year-old, and I take off work every single Tuesday to be with him. And if I worked at a bank or somewhere else like that, I couldn't do that." And so what you say about the flexibility, it is necessary. And I've got different staff members that, you know, one of them leaves at 3:15 every day, and one of them comes in at 9 a.m. every day, and one of them's not here on Fridays. And as long as we have the office coverage to keep the office open from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m., and as long as the work is getting done and the deadlines are being met, I don't care what their schedules are, if that makes sense.
It does make sense, and that's one of the reasons we need more women in the C-suites, because they understand that. And again, it's really all about the bottom line is getting met, and people are happy, and then you know, your organization is able to retain high quality talent like you that are committed and dedicated over a long period of time, because they are treating you like a person and meeting your needs. And women do understand that, and I hope and I trust there are men listening to this call too, because men that are making the hiring decisions and working in HR and working in the C-suite need to get this picture, this vision of what is working currently. This is where we are going as a workplace, and if you don't treat people with compassion and consideration and respect and flexibility, you can't retain sometimes your very best workers. You're going to lose them to companies. You know, we probably could all name the companies that are really known for being cutting edge and adopting flexibility. And now when you look at the statistics on the companies that are rated as the best ones to work for, they're the ones that do offer really good benefits packages, like for maternity leave and shared flex schedules. And, you know, they're recognizing the value of women and what they bring to the marketplace. But now I want to shift and talking about others recognizing and adapting to our needs. Now I want to shift it and say, let's take a look at how we view ourselves. And do you see with the women that you, your workmates and people that you work with and in the community, do you see women sabotaging themselves in certain things that we can work on and get better at not sabotaging ourselves?
Absolutely. You know, you mentioned that 36% of the women or 36% of the people with the MBA are women. You know, I wonder if one of the reasons for that is because women undervalue themselves. You know, just talking to women in the workplace and professional women and seeing what their opportunities are. And sometimes I'll say, well, why don't you go for this or why don't you do that or have you thought about such and such? And one of the common themes is, oh, I couldn't do that, or I'm not good enough for that, or I don't have the experience for that. Well, are we afraid of failure? Is that why? Are we afraid of rejection? Are we afraid of other people's judgmental attitudes? And I don't see that. I don't hear that from men. You know, sometimes you might have one that says that, but that's not the common theme, where it is more common with women. And I'll be honest, you know, I'm not afraid of hard work. I love hard work. And that's one of the things that motivated me to go on and get my MBA. You know, okay, let's see if I can do this. Okay, I've mastered this. Let me see if I can do the next thing. And when I've had people ask me if I'm interested in going and getting a PhD, it's not the thought of writing a thesis. It's not the thought of going to class. It's not that thought that stops me. It's the thought of, could I do it? Could I finish it? Would I pass or would I fail? And that makes me put the brakes on. And I hate that. I don't want that for myself. I don't want it for my children. And I don't want it for other women. And I wonder if that's why they don't move forward, is because of their own thoughts and feelings about themselves.
I think you're exactly right. And in fact, I've read studies and there's so much material out there now that looks at the fact that men often apply for promotions and positions that they're not really qualified for, but they have the self attitude that you talk there we go with that attitude thing again. They have the self perception that they can do it. And
right.
So they apply for it and they often get it. Whereas women, statistically we see, are less likely to step out and apply for things because they think that their hiring and their capability is going to be based on their past achievement. And it's not. Men don't think that way. Men
right.
think, I can do this. And then the fascinating thing is when you find yourself in a position where you're forced to grow quickly, most of us do.
Right.
You know, so I think you've hit it spot on, and I think that's one of the reasons why, again, Sheryl Sandberg's gotten so much attention over her book, Lean In, because that's the whole principle, is we have to press in as women, and we don't have to be threatening, we don't have to be I even hate the word emasculating, but you hear that, you know, that you and women, what is that campaign that was run recently in the last year about, you know, about not being called bossy, that you know, that women are often called bossy when we act like leaders, and we just need to start recognizing it as leadership and not bossiness, because men don't get told they're bossy. They get told they're authoritative. So we can do it. We can do it. And we can do it with grace and style.
I absolutely agree. And you know what? There was a point in my time where I did not feel like moving forward, and I did not feel like having a good attitude. And fake it till you make it became my mantra. And it is so true. I don't want to fake it till I make it my whole life, but there's some points in time that you just have to fake it till you make it. And even if we're not feeling like we can do it, if we project that attitude that we can, other people believe in us and they'll support us. And, you know, you never really know how much of an awesome support system you have until you really hit rock bottom and you need that support system. And then you find the people really do love you and care about you and want to build you up. And, you know, I just think that's so awesome.
It is. It is. Okay, so we're talking about support, and you mentioned about hitting rock bottom. I have to talk about stress for a minute, just because it is a part of our lives. We all have to manage it, and you certainly, obviously, with all that you do, with your job, your community service, your family, obviously you have to have something up your sleeve on how you manage stress. Anything you can share secret-wise about that?
Well, you know, absolutely the support is in place. I have the most fabulous husband in the entire world. And if it weren't for him, there's no way in the world that we could manage 8 children, because I'm the one behind the scenes setting the doctor's appointments and the parent-teacher conferences and making sure the homework is organized and the field trip papers are signed, and you know, I'm doing the menus and the grocery shopping and the calendaring, and he's the one that's, you know, cooking the dinner and kissing the boo-boos and patting the heads and talking to the girls about boys and that sort of thing. And so it's funny that all I ever wanted to do growing up was be a mom and do that nurturing and compassion stuff, but it's funny that he's actually the one that's doing it. And you know, it's just a funny dynamic that you have something in your head of how something's going to be, and then it doesn't work out that way. But as for managing stress, you know, one of the things that I've found that is the easiest way to manage stress, and it doesn't sound like it would be related, but it really is for me, is not taking things personal. Because I find that I get most stressed, not because of what I have to do or what's on my plate, but rather what's going on around me. And when I decided to sit back and say, you know what, I'm not going to take stuff personal, because most of the time it's not. Most of the time when somebody is having a bad day or they're stressed or they're sending off bad energy, it has absolutely nothing to do with me. And if I can have open communication with others and they can have open communication with me, whether it's usually my workmates or the family, you know, that's what helps manage stress. Because what I find is, say this is my busy time at work, generally December through the first week of April. And if I failed to tell my family that, then I would experience more stress, because they would have one expectation of me that I would not be able to fulfill because of my responsibilities at work. But if I can sit down and say, now listen, Mom is going to be working late nights, I'm not going to be able to go to soccer games, I'm not going to be able to help you get dressed for the spring dance. You know, these are things that you have to plan for and make arrangements for. And if there's something that I definitely have to be there, you have to let me know in advance. If I have that open communication with them and tell them that, and if I tell my workmates, you know, I've got something going on for these 3 days and I'm completely out of pocket, if I have that communication with them, the attitudes are still positive and the stress is not near as bad as it would be if people are feeling like they're let down because of unmet expectations.
That is powerful. And actually, that brings me to address something that that I've thought of when you were speaking about, you know, what about managing and about how it made me think of it too when you described that you're not doing what you, it doesn't look like what you expected it to look like, mm-hmm. but you're embracing what it does look like, and it's very, very good. But women, to me, as, and again, I am generalizing, but I have found that women tend to be more ready to take on guilt than men. You know, and if we're not working, we feel guilty that we're not getting the job done. And yet if we're not at home, and maybe this was just me, I would feel guilty that I wasn't at home. And so it's like I put all this stress on myself because I wasn't living in the moment and being fully present where I was. And so that's one of the things. Have you found, do you have a mental process that you use to stop that guilt process? It doesn't sound like you're walking around with it. And if not, how do you keep from feeling that way?
You know, that's funny because, and it goes back to one of the ways that women sabotage themselves. I think that a lot of times we want to be everything to everyone, and we can't. We just can't. And it is so hard to say no, but I have found that it is so much better relationship-wise, and it is so much better for my own emotional stability if sometimes I just look at somebody and say, I can't do that. And it hurt the first two or three times I said that because I did feel awful. I felt, in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, And it had to do with school activities, with the PTO and stuff like that. And I'm thinking, okay, I've got all these kids and I've got all this stuff at work. And it's funny because with as many kids as I have, I have, and I don't know if this is a self-imposed guilt or if somebody actually thinks this. I've never asked anybody's opinion. But in my mind, okay, I've got six kids in this one particular school. So are they expecting me to do six times the work that other parents are doing? And so that's a question in the back of my mind. And then I think, okay, but I can't do six times the work because I've got so many other responsibilities going on. So, you know, there are things that I do to help out the school, but then there's things that I just say, I can't do that. And I've tried to do it in the past, and I didn't do a good job because I've spread myself too thin. And one of the things I've found is that when you say that to somebody, they say, thank you. That's all I needed to know. You know, they don't want to give me a project and me do it halfway or just put minimal effort into it. They would rather me be up front and say, I can't do that the way I would like to do it, so I'm going to have to pass.
Ah, so saying no. Saying no and not being guilty about it. Because
and
knowing you have
reason
to stay in your lane.
Right, and giving a reason and say, you know, I can't help you this month. In 2 months, I can help you. What's going on then? What do you know, I'm not saying no, close the book, no. I'm saying I can't do the good job that I need to do on this right now. So let's work. Let's work on a compromise. And I think that was probably one of my kids' first biggest words was compromise, because that's what we have to do. That's what makes the world go round. We're not always all going to get what we want, when we want it, how we want it. And if we think we are, then that stress level is going through the roof because it's not a reality.
Well, and the neat thing is, you know, and wrapping it up and bringing this conversation to a close, the really neat thing is that when we live strong, when we are strong, we do teach those around us, starting with our family and our children and expanding to our workmates, and I love that, to be strong. That it's something that when we embrace that and live it, that it's we model it and then it becomes a natural legacy that we're handing other people. But wow, is there anything, any advice, wisdom, comments that you would like to make as you? I'm just rejoicing in the time that we've had together, and I could talk to you for hours, but I know we can't do that. So, is there anything that you would like to share as a kind of wrap up remark?
You know, the biggest thing that I think is so important is just to be yourself. You know, I found that whenever I try to project myself as to something I'm not, I fail at it. And people want to converse and they want to interact with somebody that's not perfect, with somebody that is just a real person. And that's who I want to interact with. And so that's who I try to be, whether I'm interviewing a potential employee or whether I'm talking to the principal at my kid's school. Just be real, because we all are real. We all have faults. We all have strengths. We all have weaknesses. We all have different things that we bring to the table. But if we are real, and if we, you can't always divulge every detail, but if you give people something to hang on to that they can relate to, that's what success is all about.
That is the truth. And wow, Tiffany, thank you so much for your time today. I know you've got a full day, and we just really appreciate you being with us today and sharing your wisdom. And there will be an article forthcoming, so I'll keep everybody posted. But thank you. Thank you, thank you for sharing your wisdom. And we wish you the best of success, and I'm excited to be on this journey with you.
Well, thank you, Beverly. Like I said, I really am honored that you thought of me. Every time that I'm presented with an opportunity like this, you know, I go, oh, me? You think I'm good enough for that? That's just so neat. And so I really do appreciate it. And thank you for inviting me this morning.
Awesome. You have a great evening. Thanks.